I was thinking about this. School started for my children a couple weeks ago. And like most families, the start of school means going out and buying the right school clothes. Well, the school that we send our kids to is a Christian, it's a parochial school, a Lutheran day school. And they have a very restrictive dress code. And I say that in a complimentary way because I believe that it's a good thing. I like the dress code to be nice and strict. In fact, I've been arguing for years that it simply be uniforms. So we went out to buy the clothes, and of course, it makes shopping a little more tricky because you're trying to fit within the dress code. And I imagine if you're buying uniforms, maybe it actually might make the shopping a little easier. I was sitting with a group of ladies the other evening at a dinner, and the subject was raised about shopping for their adolescent daughters. Well, they have a lot of thoughts on that. They do a lot of thinking about this. They have opinions when it comes to what their daughters are wearing and what's available for their daughters to wear. They go into the Gap, they go into the Limited, they go into any of these stores that are designed to appeal to the adolescents and the teenage girls, and these mothers have a hard time finding anything appropriate for their kids to wear. Not just to school, but anytime. Do you think that uniforms at Christian day schools are a good idea? The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. This first hour of Issues Etc. is open lines for your questions and your comments. That's a question I have for you. I'd like your answer to that question. I've got another question as well, but first let me tell you what's coming up later in the program. Pastor Will Wheaton will join us in the second hour. We will conclude our 10-part series on the historic liturgy today, the post-communion collect, the benediction. That brings us to the end of the liturgy. We'll do a brief overview of the entire series, the entire conversation with Pastor Will Wheaton, then your phone calls, your questions, your comments on the historic liturgy. This is the time to call this next hour if you have a question or comment on the liturgy for Pastor Will Wheaton as we conclude our series. Then, in the third hour of the program, our good friend and regular guest Gretchen Passantino of Answers in Action joins us. We'll talk about several issues. The upheaval in the International Churches of Christ. Is pedophilia a mental disorder? The Unitarian Universalist Associations and Religious Talk. And then we'll also be talking about the denial of the existence of God by a Danish Lutheran pastor. You may have read about that in the paper. Gretchen will bring all that news to us in the third hour of Issues Etc. The second question I have for you is this. First question, do you think that uniforms at Christian day schools are a good idea? Second question is, why do you send your kids to a parochial, to a Christian day school, if you send them to one? Why? What is the primary reason that you send your kids? I know why I send my kids. I'm not going to tell you why. I know why I send my kids. I'd like to know why you send your kids to Christian day schools. Or, for those of you who still don't have kids in school, they've grown up, they've moved away, they have families of their own, why did you send your kids to a Christian day school? I think I know why my parents sent me to the Christian day schools I attended. I think I do. Why did you? Or maybe you're one of those grandparents and you're watching your grandchildren grow up and they get to the age where it's time to go to school and you say to your son or your daughter, you say, don't you think little Jimmy ought to go to a Christian school? And they look at you with a blank expression and say, why, Mom? Why? Public school is free. Don't you know we have a great public school district here? They can get a good education in the public school. What would you say to them? I mean, these are your grandchildren. What argument would you make to them to say to your children, this is why I want my grandkids to go to a Christian day school? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Those are the first two questions for you. I'd like your answers to them. Why do you send your kids to a Christian school? Second, do you think that uniforms in the Christian school are a good idea? I remember when I was growing up in Dallas, Texas, the only schools that had uniforms were the Catholic schools. Oh, wait a minute, there was also an Episcopalian school that had uniforms as well. I remember playing them in sports. We played soccer when I was in junior high. And we always found it a bit odd to look out there into the stands at the soccer game and to see all the kids who weren't playing dressed in... We were in our soccer uniforms. They were in their school uniforms. And then us Lutheran kids across the way, all the kids were just dressed however kids dressed. No uniforms. We thought it was a little odd. We thought, well, that's a Catholic thing to do. That's an Episcopalian thing to do. I was, as a child, not quite sure why they did it. And I can tell you one thing. When I was a kid, that was the last thing I wanted my school to do, was make me wear a uniform to school every day. I didn't want anyone cramping my style. Not that I had any style, actually. I've told this story before, but in the fifth grade, I was once brought up in front of the class by a teacher that I remember with great fondness, and he is now a very dear friend. I was once brought up in front of the class by this teacher, and he did a little impromptu lesson for the children of the class, using me as the prime example of color coordination, what not to do. Stripes and plaid, why they don't mix. Why your socks probably ought to be of the same color. Oh, I was well-groomed. It's not like my parents just threw me into a darkened closet to get dressed. This was what I wanted to wear. This is what I thought looked good. I imagine there were mornings when my parents saw me get in the car to go to school, seeing what I was wearing, and probably wished that the school they were sending me to had uniforms. At least it would have saved their child public embarrassment. Do you think it's time for schools to require uniforms, given the culture that we're living in today? Given the fact that you can't walk into the Gap or any place to buy clothes for your daughter, or in some cases even your son, that you consider to be appropriate for them to wear any time, much less during the school day? Do you think it's time for schools to begin to require uniforms? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Now, I know that at the very least, the women have an opinion on this, because I've heard their opinions sitting around the dinner table. So you moms out there, I'd like to hear from you during this hour. I know that you've got an idea about uniforms. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. I have two things that I want to share with you during this hour by way of, when I came across them, both of them are from the LA Times. One is a book review. The other is in the religion section of the LA Times, written by an atheist who believes that the Democrats are treading on very thin ice when it comes to the issue of religion. He has a warning for the Democratic Party, and it's titled, God Help the Democrats. It's by John Bunzel, who is a past president of San Jose University, a former member of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, and he's a senior research fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution. This is what he writes. Millions of Americans do not believe in God. They do not invest moral authority in a transcendent source such as the Bible, or deal in absolute right and wrong, or divide the world into simplistic categories of good and evil. Such people, and I include myself among them, he writes, have tended to find themselves more comfortable in the Democratic Party than in the Republican Party, where a marked strain of Christian fundamentalism runs strong. Sometimes I wonder, though, whether we non-believers are good for the party. And he's talking about the Democratic Party. As political analyst Michael Barone has noted, Americans increasingly vote as they pray or don't pray. By a wide margin, 87% in a 2000 survey, U.S. voters say that religion is important to them. The Democrats, therefore, cannot afford to be perceived as the party of irreligion or as inhospitable to committed persons of faith. Bunzel, a Democrat and an atheist, continues, we should remember that the only Democrats who became president in the last 35 years were Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, both of whom spoke openly about their strong religious beliefs without compromising the principles of church-state separation. Now, he cites a survey, a 2001 study done by Louis Bolz and Gerald DeMaio, confirming a significant religious division in the electorate, with secularists and religious modernists attracted to the Democratic Party and religious traditionalists more likely to the Republican Party. But he says this should serve as a warning. If the Democrats consider themselves or wish to portray themselves, especially going into this next election against an avowedly Christian president, if they want to portray themselves as the party of irreligion or non-believers, they are bound to lose. He says this: Democrats have many good reasons to oppose Bush in 2004, but they must be careful not to lose touch with the majority of voters, 87% of whom say that religion is important. Yes, they must energize the party's liberal base, but at a time when Republicans are attracting an increasing number of voters, Democrats must also recognize that this effort will not be enough to win the presidency. Just because George W. Bush seems obligated to campaign with Jesus, Democrats should not feel precluded from reaching out to Catholic and other religious moderates whose loyalties are neither fixed nor certain and who are motivated by politics as well as faith. You know, I think he's put his finger on something. I think the warning is well taken. It ought to be. Here's an atheist warning his own Democratic Party that if they portray themselves as the party of irreligion or unbelief, they're going against the electorate. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's kick off our conversation by talking with Carol. She's calling from her car. Carol, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Pastor. I am picking my child up from their Lutheran elementary school as we speak, and your comment on dress code, I can't say I agree with it. I know my children would not wear a uniform to their elementary school if they were required to do so. I think we have to, I don't care to set my children apart. I think we have to live in society, teach them the right way to dress, and I know they feel strongly the same way also.
So let me get this straight. You don't think uniforms are a good idea, and neither do your kids?
That's correct.
All right. Is it a make it or break it kind of an issue for you if there was a school that said, okay, well, next year the PTL says time to have uniforms in this school, would that be something you'd consider pulling your kid out of school for?
Yes, I believe strongly I would.
And why is that?
Well, at our school, the issue's been raised, and it was a very small segment that were very proactive for uniforms. The majority of the school body was not asked, and it was something that was just decided by a few.
But why? I'm trying to get at your at the reasons for not only you might pull your kid out of school for over whether or not they had uniforms, but the basic reason at why you think uniforms are a bad idea. What's the basic reason?
I think it sets our kids as being different. They don't want to be different at that age. I guess in a way, I see it as a little bit uppity, a little bit private. I don't feel we're there to teach our children about Jesus, about living in the society that, I think it's a little bit upper crust, and I don't think that should be the emphasis or the direction of our Lutheran elementary school.
But you do send your kids to a private school, right? I mean, it is a private school.
It's a Lutheran school, correct.
All right, Carol, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Carol does not think uniforms are a good idea, and I hope I fairly represent her opposition here in that she thinks it would set her kids apart. I mean, and you're right. I told the story about going to the soccer game, all the Lutheran kids on the one side of the field that are watching the game, they're all dressed in normal street clothes, as you would say. We played the Episcopal school, the private boys' school. It was not only a private school with uniforms, it was a boys' school. We'd play them. And all the kids over there watching the game were in their school uniforms. And I did. It seemed a bit odd, but not that unusual. They actually had little slacks, white shirts, a jacket with a crest on it, and little hats. Of course, that was some time ago. I always thought the hats were kind of cool. If they would have let me wear them. What about the rest of you? What do you think about school uniforms? A good idea or a bad idea at Christian schools? If you don't think they're a good idea, be prepared to say why. If you do think they're a good idea, I'd like to hear why as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Maybe some of you have been through the same transition that my family has. From a school, a private Christian school for the kids that did not have uniforms. They had a dress code of sorts, but it was loose enough that the kids could all pass for normal human beings in society. To a school where this dress code has become progressively more restrictive, to their father's great delight, progressively more restrictive, verging on the point of uniforms. You would walk into the school my kids go to and you wouldn't be able to tell that it's just a dress code. You would think these kids have a uniform. Did you welcome this transition? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Apparently, Judge Roy Moore has not only lost his case to have the Ten Commandments in the rotunda of the Alabama Judicial Building, he is now, of course, you probably know this, facing the decision of whether or not he'll lose his job. His political career is another issue. Here's the story. The man who fought the federal government over a public Ten Commandments monument is now fighting to keep his judicial office and save his political career. Roy Moore will soon appear before the state's courts of the judiciary, who decides cases of alleged judicial misconduct. Moore is charged with violating the judicial canon of ethics by flouting the U.S. District Court Judge Myron Thompson's order to remove the Ten Commandments monument from the Alabama Judicial Building. Alabama's Judicial Inquiry Commission suspended Moore and referred complaints against him related to the Ten Commandments controversy to the Court of the Judiciary on August the 22nd. Moore has 30 days from that date to respond to the charges, and the court will then set a trial date, giving Moore at least 30 days' notice. So we're talking about a trial here, oh, I would say in the next 2 months. August 22 brings us to September 22, 30 days' notice. We're talking about sometime late in October. Judge Roy Moore is likely to be told whether or not he can still be a judge in the state of Alabama. He seems undeterred, however. He has actually made some noise about trying for a Senate seat or maybe even the governor's seat. The governor's had a little trouble lately in Alabama in 2006. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. That's just an update on Roy Moore. How quickly those stories surface, bubble around, and then die down and drain away. Here's something else. I came across this morning in the LA Times, and these headlines always catch my eye. How American culture influences worship. And I thought to myself, ho-ho. It's a book review in the LA Times in the religion section. The Transformation of American Religion, How We Actually Live Our Faith. It's a book written by Alan Wolf. Now, I was already interested, but what interested me even more was the fact that Alan Wolf professes no religious beliefs whatsoever. He's simply a sociologist who studies religion in American culture. What has he discovered? Here's the story. Religion pervades American culture. In God we trust is emblazoned on our money. One nation under God we recite in the Pledge of Allegiance. In our history, religion played a role from the beginning. The United States was the first country in the world to write freedom of religion into its constitution. This is all noted by Alan Wolf, sociologist and author of The Transformation of American Religion. And whether we like it or not, we are considered one of the world's most religious nations. But if we examine how Americans practice their faith in daily life, Wolf contends we'll find not the fire and brimstone belief systems in which doctrine and theology inform our lives, but rather domesticated, malleable faiths, more attuned to the surrounding secular culture than were the original tenets of our respective denominations. Quote, "Far from living in a world elsewhere, the faithful in the United States are remarkably like everyone else," writes Wolf in his sharp-eyed examination of how religion is practiced in American daily life. This is a non-religious sociologist observing American religion, and he has an eye toward Christianity in particular, it being the majority religion in the United States. And what is he telling us? If you examine the tenets of religion of those who are religious in the United States, what their religions believe and teach, against how they actually live it out and practice it, there's a huge gap. Religion in the United States, he tells us, has never existed in practice the way it is supposed to exist in theory. Like everyone else touched by American society, faith has been transformed under the pressure of our omnipresent culture, resulting in changes that have made our various faiths virtually unrecognizable. Theologians may, to use a Christian example, see Christ's message as potentially transforming a culture, but Wolf argues that in the United States, culture has transformed Christ, as well as all other religions found within these shores. In every aspect of religious life, American faith has met American culture, says Wolf, and American culture has triumphed. Now, what he did was he actually studied a broad number of denominations, a broad number of religions, most of the denominations being Christian, some Jewish churches and things like that. And what he discovered was that the trends are strikingly familiar regardless of religious affiliation. For example, he says, the way we worship is moving away from the solemn and ceremonial toward styles that are, quote, joyful, emotional, personal, and emphatic on the one hand, impatient with liturgy, and theologically broad to the point of incoherence on the other. In general, Americans tend to shy away from talk of sin and an angry God, preferring instead a therapeutic relationship with the divine, an alliance that strengthens self-esteem but doesn't exact too high a cost. Talk of hell, damnation, and even sin has been replaced by a non-judgmental language of understanding and empathy, writes Wolf. Likewise, Americans today don't get into fiery arguments over issue of doctrine and theology because, for the most part, they know very little about the doctrinal and theological foundations on which their particular religions are based. Now, this is not a Christian critic looking at the church saying, we're dumbing down Christianity. This is an unbelieving sociologist, a man who claims no religious affiliation, saying, Christians, you've met the culture and the culture has won. And you know what? He's right. We'll be right back.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What is Christian freedom? What does St. Paul mean when he writes to the Colossian Christians, whatever you do in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ? What does it mean to do something in the name of Jesus? You'll find answers to these questions and more in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, the Concordia Commentary on Colossians by Dr. Paul Dieterding. You can order the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Colossians online. Visit our website, issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and you'll find information on the book. Or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Colossians.
This Global Minute focuses prayer on a place in India where alcoholism is a major problem. It's a village with 2,000 people called Achankaville. G.V. Mattai of the India Evangelical Ministry recently visited the area, which Hindus consider a holy place. There's a large Hindu temple in the center of town, but the few local Christians had received permission to build a platform for an evangelistic crusade held right in front of the temple. India Evangelical Mission reported a positive response to the gospel, and later, G.V. Mattai was invited to personally meet with some Hindu families. He spoke to a husband and wife for 2 hours about the unique claims of Christ, and they accepted the Lord. Pray for God's love to impact India. Get more information on gospel breakthroughs in India with a brochure called To India with Love. Call 1-800-268-0461. That's 1-800-268-0461.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. I hope you find this as encouraging as I do. I'm a professor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, where job number one is training pastors for the church. Now, there's been no lack of bad news about Christian churches. The sexual abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church, the gay bishop scandal in the Episcopal Church. Last week, USA Today ran a story about battles over worship styles, contemporary worship or liturgical worship, in my own denomination, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I could go on with more examples of bad news, but I have only this minute. Sunday, Concordia Seminary began its 165th academic year with 178 new students. That is our largest number of new first-year students in a quarter century and pushes our total enrollment toward 600. St. Paul wrote, "Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me, put into practice." Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9. Our surging enrollment is encouragement that God has good news for our hurting world.
Ever wonder what you can do with that painting from Aunt Sophie? Wonder no more. Donate those unused or overused art pieces to Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri for its upcoming art market. It'll be held during LFCS's Family Walk Fall Festival on October 4th at Concordia Seminary. Bring your paintings, sculptures, decorative frames to the LFCS office located at Del Mar and I-170 between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's open lines. Our call-in numbers 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm looking for your feedback, your thoughts and opinions on these two issues. The issue of uniforms in Christian day schools. Is it time for us to buck the trend of the culture, which is, well, kind of the Britney Spearsization of our young daughters and the, who would I choose here? Maybe kind of the gangster rapping of our young men in the culture, in what the, in how they dress. And is it time for Christian day schools to say uniforms? Uniforms. Are they a good idea or a bad idea? And if you send your kid to a parochial school, why do you send them there? Why did you send your kids, if your kids are now out of school, to a Christian day school? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Your answers to those questions. Before the break, I was reading a book review from the LA Times. The book is from Alan Wolfe, The Transformation of American Religion. He is arguing that American culture and American religion have met and the culture has triumphed, that adherents to American religions don't engage in doctrinal arguments because they don't really know what the theology and doctrine of their religions are. They're tired of hearing about sin, if they ever really did want to hear about sin. Now they want a therapeutic encounter with the divine that leaves their self-esteem intact. He continues, "Though they may belong to a denomination that stresses evangelization, Americans often draw back from bearing witness to their faith if doing so might make them seem unfriendly or invasive." Now, this is a sociologist observing from the outside. He is not a Christian. He claims no religious affiliation himself. He's simply observing the interplay between American culture and American religion, in particular Christianity. The review ends this way. Wolf, who holds no specific religious conviction himself, shows readers, both believers and those who fear religion's power and its potential for fanaticism, the upside of this transformation, citing in particular our culture's extraordinary ability to embrace religious pluralism, offering neither a cynical attack on religion nor starry-eyed celebration of its triumphs. He presents a commendable balance, honoring the role of religion and the role it has played in our nation's past, while helping to see more clearly the present state of religious affairs. And he cites as a prime example the way we worship. The way we worship has reflected the culture's influence on us. The church is always saying, we're out there, we are here to transform the world. The ecumenical movement, what did they say? We're going to transform the world. How did they do it? You know what their answer was? The culture must call the shots. And it seems as though much of American Christianity has decided that's true as well. The culture has to call the shots. And when the culture calls the shots, which wins? Which is influenced? The culture or the religion? Well, a secular sociologist says the culture wins. It transforms American religion. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, there's a really good example of this. It's, some might say, an extreme example. It has to do with the moral influence that today's culture has had over religion. We all know the story of Gene Robinson. We've talked about this extensively here on Issues, etc. Gene Robinson was ordained and elected and confirmed the first openly gay bishop in New Hampshire in the Episcopal Church USA. It's hard to deny that this is a very clear example on how a moral issue, and of course it has its theological implications and roots, without a doubt, the culture and American religion have met, and the culture has claimed the victory. American culture in this moral arena has decided, American religion has decided, look, the culture's right. Now, the fallout continues in the Episcopal Church USA after this summer's election of this openly gay bishop. The pastor of an Episcopal church in suburban Baltimore has resigned. His name is Pastor Stephen Randall. He's formerly of St. Timothy Episcopal Church. Let's hear from Pastor Randall. He says the Episcopal Church has been taken over by heretics.
26 years ago, I voluntarily joined the Episcopal Church. I fell in love with the Episcopal Church. I've supported it. I eventually became a priest in the Episcopal Church. And for many of us, we feel that the church was hijacked, that it was taken over by people who wanted to change its direction, who wanted to change its purpose, much like what happened at 9/11.
He talks about a hijacking of his church. And this is a guy who, he said, he voluntarily joined the Episcopal Church. He sought it out. He became an adherent. He became a priest. He's resigned. His church has been hijacked, he says. He says his resignation results from more than just the confirmation of Bishop Gene Robinson.
It's about a lot more than that. It's really not about Gene at all. He's just a man, a sinner, just like you and I are. It really has to do with what the Holy Scriptures are. Do they have primacy in all considerations of morality in our lives, or do they not?
And he says that the Episcopal Church no longer adheres to Scripture.
Our bishops, the formal organization of the Episcopal Church, have simply said, well, we're going to let the Holy Scriptures mean what we feel that we want them to mean today. And if we want them to mean something different tomorrow, based on our whim, based on our desires, based on our lusts, or whatever, then we can change the meanings of that Scriptures. And that's not the church that I was called to be a part of.
Folks, you've heard me say this. I mean, in the analysis that we've done of this whole sordid affair in the Episcopal Church USA, I've said again and again and again, there is the heart of the issue. Now you're getting it from the horse's mouth. Now you're getting it from someone within the Episcopal Church who is saying and is ready now to leave his church once and for all because he says, well, the meaning of Scripture simply is a moving target. The interpretation of Scripture is now a moving target within my church. It can mean one thing today, another thing tomorrow, and we'll just make it up as we go along, and we'll just simply interpret it as it suits us at any given time. Pastor Randall says that he's starting a new conservative Anglican denomination.
We are just trying to be here as a place of choice, especially for other Episcopalians who feel they can no longer attend the churches that they may have gone to for decades. And we're going to offer Episcopal worship, but not under heretical bishops.
Now, he's talking there not so much about a denomination. He's actually talking about a congregation. He's not the only one, folks. In October, mid-month, there's going to be a meeting at a very large Episcopal church, one of the largest in the nation, by the way, down in Plano, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. This is going to be a meeting of people who were alarmed and who have been in a state of growing alarm for some time in the Episcopal Church USA. They're going to meet together to find out how they're going to realign themselves, because they simply believe they can't stay any longer in the Episcopal Church USA. They're not ready to resign yet, like Steve Randall. But that it might come to that. Finally, Pastor Steve Randall, formerly of St. Timothy's Episcopal Church in suburban Baltimore, says his resignation could cost him personally.
Right now, I don't have a paycheck, but I know that the Lord will provide. A number of people have decided to leave the church as well, and they have asked me to start a new church, plus several people have actually come to our church in the last 3 weeks saying, we would like to be part of something new if you start something new, and so that's what we're doing next week.
You know what I wonder about this, folks? I wonder whether or not this is kind of the shape of things to come. I've made the argument before, and you've heard me several times make this argument, that the Episcopal Church USA is a warning to the rest of us. This is where you go if you follow this path. This is where you will end up if you think you can only travel 3 steps down the path and then set up a little camp and stop there. You're wrong. Once you start down the slippery slope, gravity takes over. And this is where you will end up. Begin to compromise Holy Scripture, you'll end up where they are. Sooner or later, some sooner, some later, but eventually you'll be there. The Episcopal Church has served in the last several months as a bellwether, a warning, the canary in the coal mine, if you will, for the rest of the church. I'm firmly convinced this is why God would permit such apostasy in the mainline denomination. To warn the rest of us, to warn the people within that denomination, this is where it leads, folks. This is where your compromise and your cozy attitude toward the culture leads. I'm wondering whether or not the splitting up, the breaking up, is also simply what's coming. 505-780-1800-730-2727. Sandy is calling from Alton. Sandy, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just a comment concerning uniforms. I happen to believe that yes, 1,000 times, yes, it is time. Back in the 70s, my two young girls went to a private Catholic school. We were Baptist at the time, but for different reasons they went. They were in uniforms. The uniform of choice was a blue plaid, or dark navy, washable blue slacks, white shirt, blue, light blue shirt, cardigan choice, whiter, navy blue. It was awesome. My grandchildren now happen to go to one of our parochial schools, and there is some restriction on what they wear. Primarily, no spaghetti straps, no sleeveless, and no tanks.
Let me ask you a question, Sandy.
Yes.
How is it that Baptists were sending their kids to a Catholic school?
That was the only school available where we lived at the time. Out of the public school, I saw some real problems with teaching techniques and some of the influences at that time. Mm-hmm. It was only during the grade school era that they went. They did go over to public school by junior high. There just wasn't another option.
So you've really answered both my questions. You've
okay.
answered the question of the uniforms and why you sent your kids
yes.
to a Christian day school.
Yes.
So you saw problems in the public schools?
Back in the 70s.
Okay,
yes.
And so
yes.
you, the Baptist, said, hey, you know, I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to send my kid to the Catholic school because it's the only thing around.
That's exactly what I did, and I think that it benefited them. Again, they did, for different reasons, go on over to the public schools. But course, I'm very pleased my grandchildren are able, and my husband and I are helping. It's very necessary. You know, of course, within a denomination, it's even better because it's all reinforced. Everything we believe is reinforced now.
One more question, Sandy. Yes. What did your Baptist friends think when you sent your kids to the Catholic school? I mean, they come walking out of the grocery store with you after school, and they all look like little Virginia and little Carmine.
They did not understand at all what the importance of what I thought at least a Christian background, even though, you know, they, of course, there was a very anti-Catholic bias. I don't think it's as bad as it was, maybe in some segments of Protestantism there was, but they did think it was very strange. They just did not understand what I saw as very unsavory influences, curriculum-wise and just attitude-wise within the classroom.
Sandy, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Now, see, she managed to answer both questions in one fell swoop. That's great. So she thinks uniforms are a great idea, not only for her, but for her grandchildren, for her own kids, yes, when her kids were in school. She would even brave the sidelong looks of her Catholic brethren to send her kids to a Christian parochial school, and the Catholics were the only ones in town. So the question is for the rest of you, what do you think about uniforms in Christian day schools? Give me a call, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Also, if you send your kids to a Christian day school, why do you do that? Why did you when your kids were in school? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Darlene's up next. She's calling from St. Louis. Hi, Darlene.
Good afternoon, Pastor. Well, my children are in their late 20s, early 30s, but we did send them to a private school. It was a non-denominational setting. They had a dress code, but no uniforms. I would have, if it came up for a vote, probably voted against uniforms.
And why is that?
Because it's a teaching opportunity to let our children be taught that not everybody wear dog collars or piercings in their nose and tongues, and that normal people can look normal. I looked at it as a teaching opportunity with them.
Okay, so in other words, you're like the first caller, Carol, who said you wanted your kids to learn to exercise self-control in what they wore rather than having it imposed on them by a uniform.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And the reason we sent them to a private school so they would learn how to read, write, do arithmetic.
Oh, really?
Yes. I graduated from a public school, and to this day I do not know 2 plus 2 still equals 5 for me.
Darlene, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Pastor. Bye-bye.
Okay, so Darlene sent her kids to the private school because she wanted them to get a good education. And, you know, it's true that my wife and I go round and round about this from time to time. She's a product of the public schools. I'm a product of the private schools from beginning to end. Now, she did spend some time in a parochial school in junior high and in a grade school, but she was always very strong in saying, look, I got just as good an education in the public school. Darlene did not agree that the public schools could give her kids a quality education, so she sent her kid to the private school. Why did you, if you sent your kid to private school, send them there? Mary's calling from her car. Mary, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor Todd. Thanks for taking my call. I have got to respond to the one of your previous callers about the uniforms. I'm very much in favor of them. I have a child that's in one of the Lutheran schools, and they do not wear uniforms, and I really wish they did, because it's very difficult to sometimes go in the closet. Well, this doesn't really go together, but he's got to tuck in the shirt, so it'll have to do for today. From a practical standpoint, I think it's easier on mom. You have 4 or 5 pairs of pants and maybe 6 shirts. You wash them all at one time, and you're done for the week.
Yeah, it's like a dispenser. You just walk into I know what it's like. I mean, that's how it is every morning at 6 o'clock at our house. The kids' closets, you walk in. My daughter has the school clothes. Doesn't make any difference what you choose. You just pull out the pants, you pull out the shirts, they all go together. Voila, she's dressed. There's no crying, there's no whining, there's no rolling on the floor. Of course, my son is younger. He doesn't care what he wears, but it's the same ease of choice. Did you... Did you find yourself before uniforms getting frustrated in shopping for school clothes for your kids, finding something that was appropriate?
Oh, I do. I do. Trying to find shorts that don't have the crotch halfway down to the knees, or shirts that actually look reasonable when they are tucked in, that's tough to find. And I wish he did have uniforms. They have a dress code, so they look relatively normal. But I really wish it was uniforms. It would be so much easier in the morning.
Mary, thank you very much. 505-750-1800-730-2727. You know, if it was up to me, they'd just wear, like, gray unitards or just, you know, jumpsuits with maybe little Chairman Mao hats. It would be very easy. And actually make them reversible, so if they got dirt. My son comes home every day with spaghetti sauce or something all over him. He tends to eat that way, a little bit like his dad. And if you could turn them inside out, maybe just some kind of uniform shoes, maybe, hobnailed boots, something like that. Heck, I mean, we could even teach the kids to march in lines. I wouldn't be opposed to it. 505-750-1800-730-2727. Anita is calling from her car. Anita, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor. I just have to make a comment. Your last comments were spoken like a true dad. My girls attend a Lutheran school, a small one, and we just instituted a uniform policy about 2 years ago. And I must tell you, I was just livid. I did not want that. I thought that we were going to make our children look separate, and I thought the whole idea of our whole mission was to bring people into the church and to meet their Jesus, and I really was against it, but our teachers were fighting battles with kids that would come in with clothes that were inappropriate, and I'm not quite sure why that wasn't being taken care of at home, but, you know, that's okay, but my point is now I love it. And they told me in the meeting when I was up and just unhappy as can be that you're going to love this. And they're right. So my comment would be to these people, I understand, you know, we want to be approachable, you know, as Christians, you know, that's just one of our things to let people know, you know, hey, you know, we're just like you and we love this Lord and we want him to be part of your life too. But, you know, I understand the uniform thing now and it's growing on me.
Anita,
sure,
thank you very
much.
Thank you very much, Anita. You know, two callers have raised this, that their opposition, Anita's past opposition and another caller's present opposition to uniforms, they don't want their kids to look different. And I'd never considered that before. Maybe it's just the male sensibilities, you know, that men generally tend not to worry so much about what they're wearing. I know it's a stereotype, but it's probably one that fits. That they didn't want their kids to look different, to be able to kind of blend in to the culture around them. Although, you know, if you go to the mall next to the school, or my kids go to school, if you go to West County Mall any afternoon, I think 80% of the kids there are all wearing uniforms. They are. Maybe it's just school out in that high-rent district area of St. Louis, or maybe they'd fit in more if they had the uniforms on. All I know is that my daughter is not real anxious to keep the uniform on when she gets home. She wants to change into her clothes, as she refers to them. Her clothes are the clothes she likes wearing. That doesn't change Dad's mind one bit. Craig is calling from his car. Craig, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor. I'm from North Carolina. I'm just driving through, and I was referencing the lady that said she was a Christian and sent their daughter to a Catholic school. And we had to do the same thing where we lived because our daughter was quite popular, quite athletic, and she had a gang get after her, and she was just scared to death. So as we looked around, the best school with the best educational experience was a Catholic school. And what really surprised us was that she was so grounded in her faith that when she had to attend some of the religious classes and things like that, it really made her question her faith and really grounded her stronger and made her a more vocal Christian.
So in other words, the kind of required doctrine courses there in the Catholic school for
right.
your daughter didn't didn't harm her faith, but rather deepened the roots.
Because I think the main thing was that she was grounded to begin with and would come home at night and talk with us and question what they were talking about and then go back and really stand up for her faith.
Craig, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Okay. It's good to hear from North Carolina, even if they're just passing through our area. I've heard this from others, too, who send their kids to Catholic schools because their concern is primarily educational. Now, Craig's was the safety of his daughter. Now, that's the kind of concern that you know, touches into the minds and hearts of every parent. My parents sent me to the private schools the whole time, not because they could easily afford it. Believe me, with five kids, they could not easily afford it. And they help us. My wife and I send our kids to the private school. Well, now they can afford it. But it's not because they just want to toss their money away. It has very much to do with the fact that they want their kids to get a good education. But, you know, we live in one of the best districts in Southern Illinois for public education. They could get a good education there and have more opportunities to play sports and everything. Why do I send my kids to a private school, to a Christian school? It's not because I went, and it's not because I can afford it, because I can't. And it's not just because the school is associated with the church we go to. Well, maybe it is, for this reason. The same gospel that I hear on Sunday morning when I sit in the pew, the same Jesus that is presented to me in an unvarnished, unhidden, unobscured way, the same law and gospel that is applied to me every Sunday makes its way into the classroom of that school. That's what makes a Christian school, by the way. Not the uniforms, not the fact that they've got a Christian name attached to them or associated with the church, but Christ. It's not the stricter rules or the stricter dress code. It is Jesus Christ and Him crucified. My kids need that every day, every single day. That's why I send them to a Christian school. I need it too. That's why I go to the church I go to. In the minute left here, let me remind you about our Issues Etc. book of the month for September. September is halfway over. We've been telling you about this book, the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Colossians, for 2 weeks now. If you'd like to get the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Colossians, a good, solid commentary on the text of this New Testament book, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Call during this break, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find more information on this new commentary at our website, issuesetc.org. It's under the What's New section. You'll find information on the Concordia Commentary on Colossians. When you call or write, be sure to mention Issues Etc. and our Book of the Month for September. The book is called The Concordia Commentary on Colossians. Call CPH in the next hour, 1-800-325-3040. We'll be right back to conclude our series on the historic liturgy.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.